Hello, Stripper Whispers. This is Corey Michaelis with my stand-up comedy tour dates. If you don't want to hear them, fast forward 30 seconds twice and then rewind 15 seconds. Next week, January 18th through the 21st, I'll be in Southern California. February 2nd through 4th, I'll be in Central Oregon. February 16th through 19th, I will be in Texas with my best bud, Andrew Rivers. March 6th through 12th, I'll be in Las Vegas. We must have some listeners there. March 16th through 18th, I'll be in Gilbert, Arizona. Come see me live at a show and enjoy the first episode of Season 3. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Stripper Whisper, the podcast where we get behind the G-string and interview strippers about their lives outside the clubs, what it's like working in the clubs, and how we can all be good customers in their space. I am Corey Michaelis.
And I'm Nikki.
Today, we're interviewing Bianca from San Francisco. Say hey, Bianca.
Hello.
Thank you for joining us. Really excited to have you. The interview is interesting to listen to all by itself. But before we get started, if you'd like to put a face to the voice, check out Bianca on Instagram at Bianca Lago Art. Bianca Lago Art. Or over on our Patreon page with the video. I don't know you, so that makes me nervous.
You should be.
So I'll take a shot of liquid courage.
And I go for the wine because I'm a bit more refined than Corey. And I don't need courage to talk to beautiful women. So
classy. Ooh. And do you have something there?
I have some wine also. So Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers to my birthday, you guys. 35 today. Birthday. Yeah, I know, but
sorry.
Oh no, it's okay. This is highlight.
Me. Is it today?
It is today. Yes, that's why it's like. I mean, it's a Thursday. So what am I going to be doing?
This. Yeah.
Not too much.
Thirsty Thursday or something.
Yeah. Something. It's not quite Taco Tuesday, so I missed the mark.
plus, when you turn 25, it's not that big.
Doesn't matter.
Who cares?
Doesn't matter.
I don't know. I don't, I'm just meeting you now. Y'all have worked together though, right?
Yes.
Yeah. We've worked together. And funny enough, after we talked about doing this podcast,
yeah.
I was driving up to Humble. I haven't seen Nikki in like 2 years.
More than that. I think I stopped working there like 4 years ago. So it hasn't been that.
So we follow each other on Instagram. We talk a little bit here and there, but I haven't seen you in person in so long. And I just stopped at this gas station in Laytonville. The first person I see when I open the door of my car was Nikki.
Yeah, we saw each other at the gas station.
I know.
Randomly. Wait, in person?
Yeah. I was like, just talking about the podcast, and I was just listening to the episode with Elle Stanger. And I was like, okay, well, this is cool.
Wow, that's cool. That's where you live, and you were, how'd that happen?
I was going up to Humble to go to my friend's baby shower, just randomly.
Yeah, and then I was over there, honestly, like going through my storage unit. and I was kind of like being like, okay, I need to make this a priority and get over there and do this because everybody hates fucking storage units. And I was like, that's it. I'm going. And I would like, was in the area and I was like, got out of the car. I was like, holy shit, that's Bianca. I was like, I haven't seen her in like 4 years. Yeah.
How about that? Well, great. And when she reached out and told you about it, were you like, what'd you think? Were you like, oh, well, I don't know. What's this? What's happening? I don't understand. Or were you like, oh, that sounds great. Or what did you think?
Yeah, no, I was curious at first, so I listened to a few episodes and everything, and, I have stopped dancing, so I was like, that would be an interesting perspective to talk about, and I really enjoyed, I listened to two episodes, and I thought they were great, and I looked at your website also, and thought it was pretty funny, so...
My website? Oh, my, like, comedy website.
yeah.
Like, which website is that?
There's a line, something about doing like being a teacher and doing comedy, because you were going for like the two least like financially viable.
That's right.
And I was
time on, now podcaster too. Oh gosh. I haven't made a dime on this thing, so sorry, I roped Nikki in and I was like, oh yeah, it's good, we'll make so much money.
I think I'm more interested in like just the aspect of being able to get the real side of girls' stories. That's like the real draw into it,
right?
Fuck the money.
Well, and even for you two, I mean, even working in it, you only see them at, not only, but like predominantly see women at work, so
very true.
Unless you befriend each other outside of it, you probably have some sort of like level of, do they see this the same way I see it? Are we on the same page here? When you worked together, what club was that?
It was the Tip Top in Humboldt County.
Okay. The Tip Top in Humboldt.
Yeah, is that backwards is Pot Pit is the play on it.
That's where
the name. Yeah. We actually when Bianca first started at the club, I wasn't there. I had just had my second daughter and I was still good friends with the girl Brittany or Jade that we interviewed. Uh-huh. And I remember her being like, oh man, Nikki, there's this girl there that like, she looks a lot like you. Like everybody's like, oh, this is Eva, you know, this is like, you know, this is like reincarnated. And I was like, oh. And when Bianca worked there, you were Bella, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And I remember talking to her about it. And I remember going to work and like, it was really funny because her and I look like a lot. We like are very similar. She's got this like great butt and like shapely and we're dark hair and tattoos.
Yeah. Yeah,
Corey's very particular to dark hair.
It's a good look. I know. I remember because I kept hearing that everyone was just like, "Oh my god!" And you gotta wait until you meet Eva. And I kept seeing pictures of you all over the dressing room, and I was just like, "Who is this mysterious goddess?" And then when we did work some nights together. I know that people were just like, are they cousins or no?
Yeah.
Like, super flattered.
Yeah. It's a good poll in the strip club.
We should have played into
totally
that more.
We're totally sisters. We you make didn't. All the time.
Oh, you could have done a like not identical twin thing. You could have.
Yeah. Oh, like, that would have been good.
Funny.
It was too much. They couldn't handle it.
This is too intimidating. Did you, you don't have to say your name, but Bianca's a name. Then you mentioned another name, Bella or Ella?
Bella, yeah.
Bella. So did you dance under multiple names or just?
At that club, I was Bella, but I've been Bella, yeah. Sloan, Charlie. I think I tried Rio one time. That didn't work.
Okay.
Yeah. What was wrong with that one?
I don't know. It just didn't stick.
Yeah,
for
it
me.
Didn't. I feel
How do you come? How do you? I'm always curious how you come up with it.
I liked Charlie, this last one, because I think it's, you know, kind of an androgynous, maybe usually traditionally male names. Like I like Billy also.
I've noticed. I was going to say, I've noticed a few girls lately as I've like gotten really back into dancing. There's very like wordplay names. Like there's a few girls that I'd like Jessie, and I danced with a girl, Charlie. And there was another one that was Jordan, which is like, they're kind of like, they kind of like fit a different bill than, you know, like Candy or Cookie or, you know.
Sort of the, yeah, cinnamon stereotypical name. Yeah. A little more, yeah. Like you said, androgynous is a fun guy. Some guys, I don't know. A lot of guys like think that's really sexy and fun and cute and hot to have a boyish name for a girl.
What was the first name you went with? So where did you start dancing, actually? We should kind of just like, because it wasn't in, was it in California originally?
No.
Very proud of us.
It was the worst place ever. I was like this baby. I just turned 18. So I was just 17. And I was all angsty and like, I'm running away from home. I thought I could just pick up any club in Atlanta, but at the time you had to be 21. So I went to the first place that hired me, like right on the outskirts of Atlanta, called Flashers.
Okay.
Oh, that was so bad. And I had no frame of reference. So I was just like, this is what it is.
You're like, oh my God. You're like, I'm never going back.
It all got better.
I like slowly climbed up the ladder.
Yeah. I've never been to Atlanta. I hear so many, you know, so much commentary on that. What was it like working there? Did you ever move out of that club when you worked in Atlanta, or was that it when you were there?
No, I did as soon as I could. And then the laws changed. And then I worked a couple well-known ones, the Pink Pony and the Cheetah. It's not part of the Cheetah's chain. It's a different Cheetah. Yeah, they were definitely
just one Cheetah.
Just one.
Singular Cheetah.
Yeah. So those were cool. You should go to like Atlanta.
I haven't performed there either. I gotta get there. So
gotta get in there. Was it a lot different than California clubs as like in contrast of the kind of like customer and like who your audience is, you know, kind of sense, like that from being like in such different demographics, I guess you'd think.
California is definitely more strict.
Okay.
I worked in a lot of clubs that were just, you know, like full nude and alcohol, which is not a thing in California. It's one or the other. The clientele would depend, because like Flashers clientele versus the Cheetah is totally different,
right?
And I preferred the Cheetah because it's usually either like, you know, businessmen that are coming to have dinner and you can just like hang out and eat with them, or it was just people on like a Friday night and just having a nice time.
As opposed to the first club, because I talked to Corey about this when I started in Vegas, there's a very distinct difference in the clientele from like the 18 to 20 year old club as opposed to the 21 and up club, that I was like, as I look back now, I feel like I was looking upon like a lot of future pedophiles, like if I'm being like honest.
Yeah, about it, you know? Yeah. So
18 to 21, because you were able to work. And when you say the laws changed, that was to allow 18 to 21 in the city?
Yes.
I see.
Yeah.
How did that go? Did you guys have to do like wristbands and things like that? Or was it like,
did the bartenders just knew, and so they weren't allowed to serve you?
Oh God, I feel like that would get so shifty so quick. You'd be like, hey, psst, go order me a drink, you know, like I'm going to go over here. And
oh my God, I drank so much alcohol at all those clubs. And it's like you had to breathalyze if you were driving, but if you weren't driving, you could just go. So
it's like, oh my God. What a
sham. Bad, I guess. Now, this is maybe annoying, but the common thing I always hear about Atlanta is that one club where they have like all the like dancers who are non-traditional dancers. And I never remember the name of it. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Are you talking about the Monday night? What the fuck is the name of it? I can't think about it because the one girl was just talking about it the other day. The Tender Montana. She was talking about it.
Oh, really?
That's a great name, Tender Montana.
Oh my God, it was great. I thought it was a great name. It
took five times for me to understand it, but it was great. I was like,
okay. So there's non-traditional. I'm thinking of the Claremont Lounge.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah. Oh my
God. And it's like, I use non-traditional because I didn't want to disrespect. Is that how it's talked about, or is it talked about more, you know, I don't know, more, are people more like, I don't know, you tell me, I don't know anything about it.
Okay, well, the way people talk about it, people right. know it as the place where strippers go to die.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
I don't know, so I don't want to talk about it that way, but okay, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like, I think, yeah, it's it.
Yeah. There's a demographic older for that, strippers, right?
Strippers with like maybe a not a different look. What else would we see there if we went?
You would see, well, maybe, I don't know, this was like 10 years ago, but there was this woman named Blondie who was like the resident stripper, and her trademark was because she had like huge natural breasts that she would smash beer cans with.
Oh, there you go.
I went to this gallery one time and she was sitting on a throne with like a staff, and there were all these artists drawing her because she was just so renowned in Atlanta.
Fuck, that's, well, fuck it then. I guess she's not going there to die.
Like, yeah, right, I know.
Bondi Claremont Lounge beer can is the first thing that comes up. There she is.
Oh, yay.
Oh, and she's light skinned black with blonde hair and big, yeah. Oh, wow. Fun.
You know where you gotta go when you go.
Corey. You must go. Yeah.
First stop.
So how long in Atlanta? How long were you there?
I think I was dancing there for maybe like 2.5 years, from 18 to 20, and then I stopped for a few years, and I moved to California, and then I started at the Tip Top, which I was doing kind of like off and on, and then I moved down to San Francisco. And I worked at the Gold Club for about a year. And now I've just been doing, excuse me, like art full time. So that was the goal the whole time.
Was to kind of just use it as like a stepping stone almost. Yeah. It was never like, some women go into it and it's like a career, you know, they're like, oh, I'm going to do this until somebody kicks me out, you know?
Yeah.
I got to go to the Claremont Lounge.
That's where you're reborn. That's, I mean, it's like, it almost seems as if that, if that's what it's known for, that has to pull the kind of men that are like looking for the woman that's like on the verge of retirement, but she's like, I'm still in here, you know?
Yeah, but it also becomes kind of like, that's where people go when they're getting really drunk and they're trying to just have like fun and sort of, I don't want to say that it's like laughing at them. I feel like it's celebrating them.
Right. Yeah. Like everybody is on the same page, that it's right on the, like, it strikes me as, from what I've heard of, like, there's a wink, you know, we're all having a little bit of fun and a tongue in cheek. Like, we're strippers and we're, this is a wild night. And it's beautiful that folks who aren't typical looking strippers can work in a place and everybody has a good time.
Where did you hear about this place, Corey?
I hear about it all the time from people.
in the world of strip club, like commentary, you're like,
you think more in the comedy world is, I think, where I hear about it more.
Oh, like, okay.
Always go there. So that's probably, it's just in the zeitgeist. It's a thing, the Claremont Lounge. But I'm not going to forget it now. Oh, this is a golf tee, by the way. It's like,
oh, there you go. Oh, yeah. Oh, you were golfing quite a bit. Yeah.
I don't know why I had that in my hand. It's just sitting there. Okay. I never want to not touch. Do you? Okay. We're going to definitely talk about the art because it's very interesting, obviously, and that's integral to who you are. But first, let's talk a little bit more about the clubs. Does anyone, when you got to California, my guess would be you would get a lot of, hey, you look like blank celebrity. I'm not going to fill it in. But do you get a lot of like, you look like, who do you get?
Oh, well, I want to hear what.
Well, you
who
first.
Is it, Corey?
Well, it's never, nobody's flattered when you say it. So, like, it's never.
God.
No, because people are.
I was going to say, is never, it bad?
No. See, this, I told you, I haven't even said it yet, and I'm already.
Oh,
you know, nobody, people go like, oh, like any bald person, they just say you look like, and you're like, it's not even, I don't, just because I'm also bald doesn't mean, and like brunettes often get like my ex-wife always got the 90210 gal,
the Misha, who, Misha Barton,
haired, oh, no, like, wait, oh, so cute.
Well, I don't know, isn't that the 90210? like, oh, you're talking about the way old.
Yeah. Well, I would, you always have to say a more pretty version. So a more pretty version of Sarah Silverman, I felt like.
I love that. Whatever. She is gorgeous.
Of course. But I just know that people, it never works. Nobody ever goes like, thank you. Like, so, but I'm curious what you get.
Well, I love Sarah Silverman. That's the first for me. I've gotten Ned Gamble.
A little bit how you talk as well. A little bit how you, your inflection has, how you talk as well.
We do this kind of like over, like there's a mouth because she kind of like. But I get Neve Campbell a lot, and I've gotten Hilary Swank before, which I'm like, okay. I had short hair.
A little dumb.
She has a big smile.
Yeah, you did have short hair for a bit, right? I guess you could see that if it was like darker. You have
she
like
also
a really,
has a big smile.
So. I was gonna say, yeah, you have like a big, like nice smile, and that's like a it's like an Angelina Jolie, like a real big, you know. Yes. People want that.
You guys are great. I love it here.
All beautiful people. That's what you look like. You got out to Humboldt and then working at the Tip Top. And at this point, we don't have to like get too deep in age, but at this point, you're 21.
I think I was like 23, 24, 25. Yeah. Gotcha. I worked there for about 4 years.
Yeah, and, I think. Yeah, I think at least. Because you did off and on for a while, right? Yeah. So what brought you to California? Just so it could, to kind of like get into other, did what brought you from Georgia to California?
Why does anyone leave a city and go to the middle of the woods where no one can
Because they
find
hate
them?
The setting.
No, I just sort of really wanted like a complete change of scenery. And like, I never really resonated with Atlanta and the South and... I went on a cross country road trip and I stopped in Humboldt and stayed there for 3 weeks. And I was just like, this place is gorgeous. And I just want to live in nature and kind of be a little more off the grid. And go, and then I just moved and then I started going to school and I was working the front desk at a hotel. And there were all these like creepy old men that would be like, I like that dress you're wearing. And like, I was just like, this is fucking dumb. I hate being confined to these hours. And I'm just going to start stripping again because if I'm going to be, you know, talk to like that, yeah, I might as well capitalize and do it on my own time.
I pictured like Schitt's Creek when you said that. Have you seen that show?
Oh, yeah. It's so good.
My desk at a hotel. I was just in Shreveport, Lafayette, Biloxi, and Mobile for the first time performing, and so yeah, the South's different.
That was your first time in the South?
Kinda. I'd performed at a historically Black college like 7 years ago, 8 years ago.
How'd that go?
So historically Black colleges also have intentions of becoming more diverse, right?
Okay.
Just other higher institutions do. So their diversity coordinator came to the high school I taught at, Alcorn State is the name of the school. And he's white and he's like, I'm in charge of diversity week. Will you come perform at diversity week? And I was like,
wow. You're like, wow, what a chain of events.
He's like, well, it's 95% Black at our school. And we like to have people of different ethnicities, people from different parts of the world, people from different talents come for our diversity week. And I was like, so I'm the diversity hire. And
he's wear the headband though when you go in.
And like, what's up, guys? And they're like, exactly. Don't try and be. So I went and performed, and that was in Mississippi or Alabama. Where's Alcorn State? I can't recall. So that was the first time, and I was just kind of in and out. But this was a whole trip and the drive through daiquiris and the whole thing. So there was one couple that was like, so like, not to be disrespectful, but like, you guys just you like wear masks up in Seattle?
Oh my god.
Technically, yeah. I mean, you're supposed to.
Wherever it's required, we basically do. Yeah. And then flights, you know, and they're like, oh. No. And like, people like think it works. And I'm like, I mean, you know.
Like, this is not a conversation I want to have right now.
But what's so funny is we were like, so you just get drive-through daiquiris and they put a piece of tape over the straw and everybody just thinks it works. And they were like, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, you're like, what? That happens all the time.
Yeah, yeah. It's not stopping anybody. But yeah, so you come out to Humboldt, and I mean, you stopped and you can't drive much further. So you stop there and all alone, all by yourself.
No, I did do this with an ex-boyfriend.
Ah, boyfriend at the time or ex-boyfriend at the time?
Wait, what?
He was your boyfriend at the time.
Though. Oh, yes, at the time. And
make a road trip with an ex.
No, that wouldn't be fun. Or maybe, I don't know.
You're like rekindling. I don't think it'd be fun.
No.
Humboldt, and that was whatever that college is, that was our rival in basketball because I went to Seattle Pacific.
Oh, really? Cool.
Humboldt State, is that where you went? Mm-hmm.
And it's now Cal Poly, which is...
It's crazy.
I know.
That California is allocating... I read an article about it because I was like, this is crazy. $480 million to turn it into a Cal Poly university. And I was like... Wait a second, where do you guys have all this fucking money? You know, like, really? They're just like, yeah, it's like a big deal. It's a really big deal.
Huh.
I know. I have a lot of feels. We could talk about it or we could just keep,
Did you study art? Did you study something in the art field?
I did. I actually started, so I studied art in Atlanta and then I started studying environmental science. And then I was like, no, I actually really want to do art. So I went back to art.
Goddamn.
What? Sorry.
You goddamn hippie, aren't you?
I can't help it. It's just in my blood. I'm just a vagabond, just traveling the countryside, painting and stripping.
It's not a bad getup, right? You're like, I could paint myself stripping and people will buy it because it's like, it's art, you know?
Actually something that I've like kept really separate because I was always afraid that if I talked about it too much, that it would somehow like hinder my career. And then I've decided I'm actually doing a piece in this exhibit next month where I'm talking about it. Because I like artists that are vulnerable and just sort of share who they are and, you know, their whole story. And I'm such like pro sex work and just want people to be chill and just have a nice time. It's all good.
That was a big thing that you did in Humboldt, right? You should talk about that. The vagina monologue. Like it was like you did a whole vagina. She did a whole vagina like sculpture kind of like you were like plastering people's vaginas, right? I remember that was a big deal.
Oh, man.
I've plastered a couple of vaginas before. what was that?
Yeah, I did a Planned Parenthood fundraiser when Trump was elected and just, you know, that was how I kind of processed everything. And then I painted a bunch of vaginas and sculpted a lot of them and did a fundraiser where we raised like $3,000 for a clinic in Eureka. And we had like games about consent and it was fun. And then it sounds like Brittany.
Yes, it was definitely Brittany.
Yeah, she was on the podcast. She also sculpted a bunch of star vaginas for this event and it was really fun.
Yeah, that's like a good way to like intertwine the, because I think when people assume art, for the most people, they're like, oh, you draw or you paint, but you just forget that there's so many fields of art that so many different people appreciate. And I swear to God, that is all that Brittany talks about is the goddamn vagina thing. She's like, oh my God, I have it like hanging in here and this is my vagina. And I show it to people when they walk in.
That makes me so happy. Yeah. I love it. Like so many people still send me so many vagina related things. And every now and again, weekend, I have these tiny canvases I'll paint vaginas on, and then I'll just like put them in random corners in the city. Because I hope it brightens people's days, yeah. You know?
Nobody ever sends me anything vagina related. What do you even do? So you were just obviously celebrating Trump's win.
Oh yeah, totally.
Anyway, so you were, that's really fun. Cause yes, as you're saying, like my ex-wife, she's an interior designer and like a graphic artist. And so, and then I do stand up. And so we're really, you know, promoters of the arts, and creativity is the only like thing that a computer can't do. And it's, you know, creativity is giving the world something it didn't know it was missing out on. So like vagina casts are something the world didn't know it was missing out on. And then it is. And so but you mentioned painting. So is that primarily what you do?
Yeah, mostly painting. I like was doing a lot of portraits for a while. Now I've been painting more murals. But I'm kind of branching out right now and doing some work with installation and just kind of building these objects that people can interact with that I'm kind of excited about.
That's fun.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
So you were dancing at the club in Humboldt and then you found yourself in San Francisco. So how was that transition? Because I went to a club one time in San Francisco and I was like, holy shit, I don't know if I'd ever work here like that, you know, because it's so different. Humboldt is like a very particular kind of club. So how was it going from the club in Humboldt to then being in the club in San Francisco, which I'm assuming is quite different than there?
Yeah, it was like night and day, and it had been so long since I worked in a club like that in Atlanta. So I was like, Humboldt is just so chill, and all the girls at the Tip Top are the most like supportive, loving, wonderful women. So it was always cool to be there, you know, even if it was a really shitty night, it was like you still knew that you'd have a nice time with the girls.
Yeah, we'd draw in the back. I think about it, like we were like fourth graders. We like drew on the walls in the dressing room. Like that's
what I did watercolors. We yeah. I think I have a drawing of you that I did. Yeah, and then going to the Gold Club, which is where I worked here, and it's like two stories, and there's like so many girls working in a night, and it's so cutthroat, and you really don't know who you can trust, and you kind of have to, you know, of course there's going to be nice people wherever you go, but it is a little more intense. And it was also right after they changed the law in California where dancers were employees. So I think that girls were even more ruthless.
So I've never particularly worked at like, how did that go when they changed it to employees? Do you still make tips? I was always under the assumption, at least the one club that I went to, it was the Condor. Like girls had boxes that men had to like put money. You can't even touch your money. It's like a very weird sort of, it's everything that stripping is not, you know?
Yeah, it's bullshit. they like tips go into a box and then they count how many dances you do. So someone's always watching you. And then at the end you owe them based on how many dances you did and you have house fees. And yeah, so girls were telling me that they used to make like $300,000 a year at that club and they were making $100,000, which is just crazy. And in San Francisco, $100,000 is like barely nothing. Making it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You live in a studio apartment with two other people.
Well, yeah. In my experience, tips are supposed to go in boxes, but just kidding. Just the tips are supposed to go in boxes. Boxes. You guys are like, what the fuck?
Wait a second. I was like, what? Do they tip you in boxes at comedy shows?
bad jokes. I'm curious how cutthroat plays itself out. What does that look like?
For me, I just sort of like to operate on a, I'm going to be chill with everyone, but I'm not going to get close to anyone because I don't trust any of you bitches. And I like see you being friendly and then getting really drunk and talking a bunch of shit. I just see it. No. I'm just trying to make my money and leave, and I don't want to get involved. So I think cutthroat just means a little more like isolated and just there. Yeah.
Not here to make friends per se, here to work, here to make money. But like, would that mean there was like ways in which women would undercut other women or not steal, but just sort of like, yeah, would they do things that hurt your work?
Not that I'm aware of, but I feel like to a degree that must happen at every club, right? Like,
yeah, I feel like there at least has to be a level of, it's like an elevated form of cattiness almost, you know. Yeah. It's like you don't necessarily use the word cutthroat. I remember I worked with this girl in Vegas, and there always used to be two routes that I would see girls take. There would be tons of girls that when they saw it with customers, they would be like, oh, I don't like that girl. I don't like that girl. And you'd be talking to a customer and the customer would be like, why don't you like her? Like, give me the drama. And I worked with this girl and it was super manipulative because she was really, I mean, I don't even think that she had like relations with any stripper in the club. She was pretty isolated and kind of cutthroat. And when she talked to customers, a customer would be like, oh, what's up with that girl? And she'd be like, oh, I don't know, she doesn't like me. And it puts herself in a victim situation where the customer would be like, well, why don't they like you? You seem so sweet. And it would like project enemies everywhere. And it was really crazy to see because I was like, this bitch is good. Like, Jesus
Christ, you know? Well, that's definitely one strategy.
Yeah. I was like, that's
used it as a part of her, her pitch to the guy.
It was like a sales pitch. Like, yeah, she victimized herself. And then you get these men that come into the clubs and they're like, oh my God, well, you're so great. Like, why doesn't she love you? Yeah. I'm like, oh, you fucking sucker.
Well, what was your way of making money, Bianca? I mean, was it like just amazing on the stage, charming on the floor, great dances, all of the above? How did you?
All of the above, of course. I used to really enjoy doing stage sets. But not like all the time, just like a few times in a night. It's fun if there's the right song, you know? But yeah, I think it's the charm for sure. And being just personable and actually caring about what a person has to say and finding that right balance of like cute, charming, fun, real, down to earth, but also seductive and flirty. And, you know, you just want people to like just have fun. And feel sexy. Right.
It's all of the above.
Yeah.
It's I remember working with Bianca and it was like, I remember being like, oh yeah, it was great together. Cause she was just like, cause I have the same, it was like always that was like the perfect mixture of what you expect out of a stripper is like, you want her to be super hot. You want her to be really seductive. You want her to be able to hold a conversation. And I always remember, I don't come across many women that are, and that's not downplaying anybody else, but that's like a common thing, you know? So it's like, I always liked about
that's such a funny thing. Thank you for saying that. But I think about that, like with transferable skills, right? Because you have to have so many of them working as a dancer. And then there's like, how do you put that in a letterhead if you're trying to, you know, get work elsewhere after the fact? Like, you have to have so much emotional intelligence and people skills and managing yourself, you know, the list just goes on and on, and you need to know like a lot of topics so that you can have conversations with people about, you know, anything.
Right.
Yeah. That's
interesting.
Well, yeah, there's this, you know, in teaching, we call it building social capital with like the kids, and like, there has to be, it doesn't have to be, but from the perspective of a patron, it's just really nice when someone seems like, oh, they're having you're having a good time and you are actually interested in chatting. And even if I know like you aren't, you're it's a little bit of an act. That's okay, because
it still not, feels genuine,
right?
I get what you mean. So in a club like in San Francisco, where you're dealing with like sort of situations where there's a lot of girls and you're putting like money into boxes, like what constitutes like the perfect patron in that sort of club? Because San Francisco obviously caters to people that obviously have a lot of money and things like that. So it's like, who are you looking for in the strip club in your sort of situation when you know you have those skills and you're able to talk to people and hold a conversation? Is that like who you seek out?
Yeah, I just seek out anyone who has money.
Period.
So I appreciate people, especially in that club, that knew that they take a lot of our profits and that they, if they wanted us to have the money to tip us. So a lot of people knew, you know, if you're going to do a dance or go to VIP or whatever, like tip generously so that I can actually have it be worth my time. And some people understood that and just, you know, you didn't have to like hustle or anything.
Do they not take portions of the tips in at the clubs?
Not the tips.
Okay.
Yeah, which is nice. It just has to stay in a box. And then you can choose to report it or not at the end of the night, depending on how you want to do your taxes.
Huh. Interesting.
Oh, we'll cut that part. you mentioned the perfect song a bit ago. What is your perfect song or perfect songs?
Okay, so like right before the pandemic, I was I really love Dancing to Feel It Myself by Nicki Minaj.
Yes.
I would like walk up and just like, if I had like dollars on me, just like throw them up and just like, it was over.
Do you get to pick your music in those bigger clubs? So in the club that we worked at in Tip Top, it was very much like you have communication with your DJ and you can kind of like pick your genre. But when it goes in bigger clubs like that, how does that go? Are you like in communication? Do you kind of get to pick, or do you just like cross your fingers and hope that they're going to play you the song that they know you like?
Yeah, I think it just depends. At this club, all the DJs were great. I've actually only had really awesome relationships with DJs at clubs. They've always been like super cool, and it's more like they're trying to keep the tempo up. So let's say that it's like, oh, there's a lot of people in here, we gotta like, we can't do a slow seductive song, but we could do a song from your list so long as it fits within like the vibe we're trying to go with right now. Yeah. So it's a little bit more like that, whereas the Tip Top, I remember, it's like you could do whatever you wanted. Yeah, if you wanted like to do some honky tonk, like whatever, it doesn't matter.
Play it. Yeah.
Put a boot in their ass. It's the American.
Yeah, it's, I was ridiculous.
Fun. And then you said pre-pandemic you were dancing to that song a lot. Is that about when you kind of moved on and stopped?
Yeah, I did. I moved down to the city. It was like, okay, I'm going to dance and then grad school starts. So I'm just going to like save some money until that happens and then I'm done. And then the pandemic happened like a couple months later. Yeah. And I was like, fuck.
Yeah, you're like, well, I guess I'm going to keep dancing as much as
I couldn't. Yeah. Everything was closed. Oh, yeah. Everything was closed. And then my backup plan was to substitute teach. And that, they weren't accepting teachers because of the pandemic either. And I was like,
you're like, what do I do? And
I just started hustling portraits like crazy. I was like, do you want a portrait? Do you want, like, I.
You're at home all day long, all night long. Don't you want to look at something pretty?
Yeah.
What, did you ever end up substitute teaching by chance?
I did in Humboldt, not down here.
Okay.
Yeah.
I had that for the last few years. It's, I loved being a sub and a dom. That was cool. But, I never made that joke in class, but,
in class.
I had to, well, you kind of had to in the interim between I taught high school for 12 years and then stand-up comedy full time. But making that transition, you can't just like flip a switch, you know. So I substitute taught. But pandemic, like there's virtual and like there's no jobs available. So but now they're like terribly, terribly strapped. They need substitute teachers so badly right now all over the country. Because people got real jobs and realized how shitty it is to substitute teach.
Yeah, they're like, I don't want to do that anymore.
Yeah, I heard a radio advertisement for it. They're like, are you looking to substitute? And I was like, well, I was, and you didn't want it. And now I don't want to.
I don't want to.
What are you pursuing now? So is dancing kind of just like, that's a done chapter in your life? Like, are you in a place with art now to where it's like sustainable and obviously a little less like mental taxing, I guess you can say?
Yeah, that is where I'm at now, which just feels so good because it's what I was working for. And it is the most sustainable it's been over the last like year and a half. Things have been really consistent and the momentum's just picking up and it keeps going and going. And then like painting murals has been the most fun ever because I really like the physical part of dancing, you know, just like being
active. Oh yeah, you're moving. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's hard for me to just sit in front of an easel or a computer all day long. So being able to move around is really great. And I don't know, I just really like painting big walls.
How do you get commissioned for murals, like say in a big city? Say you're in a place now, like do you advertise yourself? Like what is that? Is that a route that like kind of like takes like being in the know of certain people to be able to do that? Or how does that go?
Some of the murals I've got, I would just like go to people and be like, hey, I noticed you have a blank wall. And that's a shame.
Yeah. So I would boring. Just
some people were into it. Some people were like, no. And that's just, you know, the name of the game. But it just kept pushing. And then you get people that say yes. And then I do advertise. And then the more that I have, the more people tell their friends. And then I have more work to show people, which helps me get more jobs. And that's how it just keeps snowballing.
Right.
Interesting. Because we stand up, you know, similar in that it's a different every today. I did two virtual shows, tomorrow nothing, last week touring the South, like it could be a different anytime. And so you got murals, installations, you sit in front of the computer all day. Is that working on the business or is that working on art also?
Both.
So you do some graphic design then as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
I try to do anything, you know.
Yeah.
She's a jack of all trades.
I think a lot of people are so ignorant of like the business of being an artist, me included. So like how does that work? And you're living in San Francisco, like the most expensive city in the country or almost. And so you must be good.
I don't know. Thank you.
Sure. I don't know. I'm forcing you to say you're good at it, but that's really cool.
Best. You should check out my Instagram and buy all of my art.
There you go. That's fun. And you were, so you like felt like you were kind of peddling what you had, because you have pieces that you've created and they are for sale. And at the beginning of the pandemic, you were like, oh, I got off these, you know? So how do you keep, like, do you have to have a backload of like pieces of art that you, I don't know, you know, like that you want, like I can sell these if something goes awry?
Yeah, I've been working a lot with commissions, which I do sell, like I put some of my originals on different things that people can buy on my online store, so that's like revenue that comes in. And then people like to get portraits of their loved ones, or, you know, I got someone, my favorite commission, I don't know, one of them, I have a lot, but someone wanted like the creation of Adam, or God creating Adam from the Sistine Chapel, you know, with the finger.
Mm-hmm.
And one of their workers from a farm up in Humboldt and their dog, and the background was like this psychedelic graphic kind of thing. And I was like, yes, I would love to paint that. I would never paint that on my own.
You're like, thank you for the idea. I've noticed lately, and I just want to talk about it because I think, what's the Pam thing? Are you doing an NFT of the Pam cat?
Pam. Oh my God. Yeah. So I did an NFT. You know, when you're like looking in the clouds or like wood grain or like a splash of water and you like make a character.
Sure.
You see if, yeah. So I have sketchbooks where I draw some of those things out and they're all very bizarre and fun. And my friend approached me to see if I wanted to team up with her to do NFTs and she'll manage it and I draw them. Like, that sounds great. So I was like looking at the clouds and I was like, okay, there she is. That's Pam. Yeah, and that's we're going to make her an NFT. She comes in every color. I'm actually going to work on the green one after this podcast. And yeah.
That's fucking awesome.
How are the NFT? I'm so ignorant of that too. NFT. How are those doing? Is that been a viable thing?
I sold my first one like 2 weeks ago. Okay. So that was exciting. And I don't know.
Sure.
It's kind of just almost as if it's like you're on the end of like, you just kind of get to like draw it and it feels good in the sense of like putting it into who knows where it's going is like another thing, you know, you're like, yeah, take her and create something, you know?
Yeah. I'm like, I'll draw the thing. NFTs and the metaverse and whatever, I have my own feels about it, but I might as well participate in the times that I live in some
way. I feel like that space was I feel like it's getting like drawn away from what it should, which it's supposed to be about art. Like that's the whole space of it being digital art. And I think that that's like a really, if you are an artist, it's a great field to venture into. And I think it's just getting like blown out of proportion on social media. Cause they're like, you can make an NFT and you, and you're like, wait, how, like, how do I do that?
You know? Well, the crypto, like it's so funny. Cause like, again, something I'm pretty ignorant of, but on the Super Bowl, like 20 commercials were about cryptocurrency and stuff. Yeah. And it's just like so
it's
funny.
Not doing good right now, so don't invest.
Well, I saw one tweet that was like, I wonder why they have to make so many commercials. how willing are you when you get commissioned to do whatever the hell they want?
Oh, it depends. I had someone ask me if I would do Calvin Hobbes, like, you know, the decal sticker of him. Like,
yeah.
They wanted that on the Black Power fist and what else? some other thing that, yeah. And I was like, no.
Yeah.
No. Like, I'm a pass.
And they kept asking me and then I just stopped replying. And I was going to say this whole thing or I was going to be like, yeah, I'll do it for $10,000. And then I was like, no, I'm just going to not get
Yeah.
Not even humor it, not even throw out an absurd number. Cause if they agree, then you're like, well, fuck.
Yeah, right.
Actually, I was lying.
Interesting.
And I also don't really like to do pet portraits cause I totally respect it. I just didn't want to get niched into that. And it's so easy to do. My mom actually does a lot of them and I think it's so great. But I just was like, yeah. So those are the two things that I like have said no to. But
yeah. And your mom's an artist as well?
Yeah. She does like fully pet portraits and they're like really good and super cute.
Oh, right on.
Yeah.
Did they know about like the dancing and whatnot? Was that like kind of something that your family was like, oh, okay, that's like kind of like a stepping stone in life sort of thing? Because I know some people girls strip their way through college and it's like this demon of a secret that they're like, oh my God, nobody can find out, you know?
My mom knew and she had times where she was supportive and other times where she was like, no. And then I think my dad was just like, I think he knew and was just like, we're never going to talk about this.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
This is the black sheep of the family. Purpose. It's not you. It's the stripper.
But my older brother, he knew and he's like supportive. Like, he never really like wanted it for me, but he's, you know, cool.
I know it's hard to explain to family members when you're level headed that you're like, listen, like, I'm not like, I'm not a drug user that's prostitute, you know, like, I'm not that person. They're like, no way. Like, that is 100% you. And you're like, well, okay, we just won't talk about it.
Yeah, right, right. You should just know this version of
purposely ignorant of it, and that's fine. And or purposely naive is what I always say. A lot of parents are purposely naive. Like, so many dancers have said, like, yeah, I told my parents that I bartended a strip club, and then they just go, okay.
Yeah, they're like, move on. Questions.
And everybody's happy, and they probably know, and I know that they probably know.
I bet you do.
That's fine. And there, where's family at? Where are they all at?
In Atlanta and in Brazil.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Brazil. Do you go back? Do you visit?
Yeah, I do. I haven't been since before the pandemic. So, but yeah, it's amazing. So you guys need to go to Atlanta and go to Brazil.
Deal. She's on the list. I don't know who's going to want to listen to the comedy in Brazil, but maybe it's like a fun trip.
I think I'll do it. Yeah.
Stars is that?
I know it was over summer because it was so busy. And I think Corey thinks that it was like it could have been in March, but I don't feel like it was. But Corey was in there, and he was in there with a friend. And I remember talking to him, and he was like, do you want to dance, you know, and whatever. And I feel like it was busy because I wasn't really trying to chit chat. And Corey was like, no, but I have this podcast. And I was like, yeah, sure. Like, next, you know? And I ended up seeing him on Instagram. And I was like, oh shit, that's such a good idea, because there's so many women that, like, it's just a really interesting field of work of women that come from like walks of life. It's like, usually when you see people that go into tech, you're like, oh, okay, you went to school, you did computer science, you did this is why you're in this field. And it's like strippers, it's like, it's everybody. It's like that has 10 kids, no kids, college, never going to, you know. And it's like, and I thought of the premise of it. So I was talking to Corey about it, and I was like, curious, because I saw my reaction, and I was like, how does it really go? Like, do girls really respond to it? And then Corey was like, well, I guess before the pandemic, he used to convince girls to go to his hotel room, which, like, I was like, what? How did you get anybody to go there?
I went to a woman's house, her kids' toys on the ground, and just interviewed her there. Couple times in my hotel, couple times where two women came because they were like, I'm bringing a friend. For a while, I didn't have anything for them to listen to because I was banking up the interviews, you know, and so that was even more kind of like sketchy. So Elle was great to do it because she's really well known online and in Portland, and so it was really cool to have her. And then I released her as the first episode, and then I could be like, here it is. So that legitimized it a little bit more. But my bigger issue was having women ask me to not release it or take it down after the fact. Like, I had a drink or two, and I said things about people at this club that I didn't want to say, and I'd be like, you're killing me. But okay.
Oh, you're like, it was so good.
I never thought anything negative about things that were said, but anyhow, so I was like, you show your butthole to people, like, who cares?
But it's different. Yeah. I get it. I was back and forth with it for a while too, just like I was with, like, if I ever wanted to tell someone. But for a while, it just kind of felt like living a double life. And it's also just like, I believe that I think that people are just sexual, and people need to just chill the fuck out. And it's fine to have a place where it's consensual and you get to express yourself. And I think the more open that we are about it, then the healthier that we can navigate these waters. And I don't feel like people should be shamed for it. So it's like, I understand people being hesitant and kind of going back and forth, because I did that too. But that's why we're doing these podcasts, right? To switch the narrative a little bit.
Yeah. And I think it's like so important that people hear that, like, a lot of strippers are just normal people. I think it's like this very weird image around them that you're like, oh, you're crazy, or you're in a hard time, or, you know, and it's like, I mean, you can treat it as a job, you know, like you, like Corey was saying, it's like, even as you go in as a patron and somebody's like, well, I know that you're kind of pretending, but we're still like kind of having a real conversation. And I'm like learning about you, and it's like, feels genuine. And I think at the end of the day, it's like, everybody is searching for some sort of human connection, and it facilitates that in a sexual way that people also are always seeking, like, sexual situations, you know. Yeah. It's like, so
it, like, I also have a theory where I feel like, because of our culture, and it's changing now, but it's still very much this way, that men feel like, I mean, just like with mental health, like going and looking for a therapist or whatever might be like a slight at your masculinity. So it's better to talk to a hot chick in a bikini.
Yeah, because, like, that's really what
I had so many people cry to me in VIP rooms, and I just held them. Like,
you're like, I'm here.
That was between us.
And I think about that kind of stuff all the time. I'm like, there's like people, I don't know, there's like a something that people are looking for, and this is a place that it can be offered, and you learn. So I don't know.
I totally get that. I think that the biggest thing that you come across with men in strip clubs is dealing with breakups, and they don't know how, and they don't want to talk to a therapist or a friend. So they go somewhere, and even though in their mind, I don't think they're like, the money issue is not, they're just trying to talk to somebody. And like, it's almost like a healing process, you know, because they don't have that outlet, because like you said, it's like a masculinity thing. It's not like you can go, because a lot of women will go to a therapist when they're going through a hard breakup. They're like, fuck it, I'm going, you know, I need somebody to talk to. And like you said, it's like a very demasculine sort of thing to be like, well, I'm going to go to a therapist. The only man I've ever heard talk about going to a therapist is Howard Stern. And he's like the most unmasculine man I think that you could come across. So I don't know if that's a good representation.
Well, I think we all need counsel in our lives. Like, that's sort of where I land. And like, sometimes we get that counsel from our families, and sometimes we get it from friends, and sometimes we don't have that. And so, like, we should go, and I, you know, counselor, therapist, like, there's also words that have stigma, right? So, like, I always said I was going to a counselor, and I don't think I was doing that because of masculinity, but that's just what I thought he was called. And so I went to one for like 2 years. He was awesome. Saw him once a week. It was amazing. And then I lost my health insurance, and
we didn't, like, no.
I couldn't, you know, whatever. And then we didn't, and it was so funny, because like a year later, we were connected on Instagram or something. He's like, you want to just go grab a beer? And I was like, yeah.
You're like, fuck yeah.
I was like, are we going to? And then we just bullshitted. And then it was so funny, because he spent the whole hour talking about this woman he was dating, and he wasn't sure. And
yeah.
He was young. And I was like, oh, my.
Wait a second. Now I know how much you charge.
The student has become the master. And like, yeah, hand over the money. But it was great. And like, they ended up staying together, having a baby, and that kind of, it didn't end our friendship, but it just became much more difficult. But we would go to Buffalo Wild Wings every Tuesday for like 6 months and just bullshit.
Your counsel saved their marriage. Wow. Yeah,
well, that's what I always tell them. But you know, that's so yeah. So, and then, you know, Elle talked about in the first episode, you're talking about a version of it here. We pay for touch, counseling, talking, all that stuff all the time. And usually when we pay for it, people are fine with it. Pedicures, nobody questions it. You know, getting your head massaged.
Just saw one today.
Nobody cares. Oh, wow. Yeah. Happy birthday.
Yeah, thank you.
And so, I mean, but even those things, some people have, you know, a stigma about. My mom has a stigma about this podcast. Doesn't want to hear about it. Doesn't want to know about it. Mm-hmm. But her issue is, I don't know if she knows this, but I know that it's judgment from other people.
Of course.
She personally doesn't really, She's cool. She's chill. She drinks. She parties. She's fun. Smokes weed. Retired. Whatever. Makes sex jokes. Curses. She doesn't want me to post about it on social media because she thinks her friends and family will see and they'll judge her. Right. So that's her thing. And I like try to be like, that's your thing. That's not my thing. Mm-hmm. But then I also pick my battles because my mom and I don't need to change a 66-year-old lady's, you know, entire opinion at the risk of hurting our relationship. But anybody else is listening?
No.
That's kind of the idea. It's like, hey, we just spoke for an hour to two very intelligent, very talented people who one doesn't dance any longer and one dances a bit, but that's because you're so good. You don't have to dance all the time. Like that's, and like, you're going to, and you're pursuing other things like Nikki and yeah. You're pursuing art. And it's like so crazy to me that people just assume y'all are a certain type, but they do it about all sorts of jobs, I guess, but way more to you guys.
Yeah, that sucks. What do you do though? You just get your word out there, right? You just tell people when you tell people. I've gotten, and it's funny because when I was younger, I didn't want to tell people I was a stripper, which is weirder because now that I'm older, I'm like, well, I don't care. Like, what do I care about your opinion? Not really. Like, you don't pay my bills, you know? Like, so, you know, and it's strange because I think as you get older, and I think it happens with a lot of like strippers and people that transition, as you realize how like stupid a lot of that shit is, you know, like the judgment and the like worrying about what other people are doing or worrying about what other people are thinking about you. And it's like, we live in a world now. And I was talking to my fiance about this, to where it's like, it's so hard to like judge people and like get support about it, because we live in this world where everybody's like being embraced, you know. It's like, you were a stripper, but now you do this and that's amazing. And it's like, I think of it that way as more that I'm coming out and talking about it. It's like, well, who's going to say something to me? Like, are you going to discriminate against me because I'm a stripper? Like, well, who's the fool here? You know? Yeah, totally. And I think it's so cool. Like when you see people, you know, like Bianca, that like, she's like pursuing a master's degree, right? In art.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, you see those sorts of situations and it's like incredible. Cause you're like, well, hey, you were able to focus on school and you had this job that like you could go to when you needed to pay your bills and you were still able to focus. And I think it gets this really bad rap that people just assume that strippers are just like, you know, druggies and off the wagon and going through a hard time in life. And it's like, I talk to people about it all the time where I'm just like, you could really use this as a great stepping stone if you like, you know, look at it that way. So that's the point of it, I guess. That's my reason for joining. So
yeah.
No, for sure. It can be a tool, and like not only like the stigma on the kinds of people that are dancing and or even just the patrons that go into the places, but just like just the notion of dancing too needs to be destigmatized, I think, because it's just whatever.
It's just dancing. It's like, we all watch nude sex scenes on Netflix, okay? Like, we see it.
You know? Well, and even one step further of like, it's just as much of a function of your like frontal cortex to dance as it is to know a math problem, as it is to paint, as it is to write a joke. Like, that's all the brain telling the body what to do.
Right.
And so like, people will talk about athletes and be like, well, just like born that way. And you're like, no, that was years of training and working hard and their brain working really well to tell their body what to do and be just a phenomenally smart person. Because a lot of cultures have view smart and intelligence differently than we do. We like to view it as like the ability to read, write, and like whatever. But other cultures is like, oh, well, the best dancer, that's the smartest person.
Yeah, that's who made it.
Those are all, that's all the function of the brain. It's all intelligence. So we should view it even more like, not just like it's okay, but like y'all are brilliant to be able to have your brain tell your body to do that. So
thank you, Corey. You, that's right.
I can't flip my hair. Heels,
okay. I tell people all the time that those are the comfiest heels I own and I can fucking run in those things.
Yes.
So on that note, Bianca, people find you on your Instagram. Bianca, am I saying it right? Lago Art?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And can connect with you there if they would like to give you money for art.
Yeah,
look up some lady. She used the some lady, which I really like because that's a great way to play on. I'm just some lady, you know, like I make art.
Why are we freaking out?
I'm just some lady.
Nikki, as always, she is tattooed on Instagram, and it's all in the description. I'm Corey Michaelis Comedy on all the things. And the podcast called Stripper Whisperer. Thanks for listening and thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Bianca.
Thanks for having me. It was
hi, nice everybody.
To meet you, yes.
Pleasure. Yeah, I'll let you know when I'm in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.